Hey, Anna, you know my main man in astronomy, right?
Oh, yes. Galileo.
Galileo. Love Galileo. My favorite astronomer of all time.
Oh, my God.
Now, there's this connection between astronomers and music.
Really?
Yes. So astronomers happen to be very good musicians, at least a lot of times. Me specifically, but other people
also. I was
going to
say, yeah, we'll get to that later.
Now, Galileo, his dad was basically a musician. That's what he did to earn his keep. And so he was this musician and musical experimenter. And so when Galileo was growing up, he was hoping maybe Galileo would become a musician too.
Okay, like following his footsteps
kind of
thing?
Exactly, exactly.
Isn't it the opposite? Like, you wouldn't want him to be a musician? Like, oh, there's no future in this kid.
Yeah. And so he kind of lost that idea. And then he sent Galileo, young Galileo, to school to be a doctor.
Oh.
And that's when he dropped out of school.
Oh, man.
Poor Galileo. Yeah, he was a rebel. What? He was rebelling against his dad.
No wonder you identify with him so much.
There's a lot of similarities. Except for I didn't rebel against my dad, the engineer. I ended up being an astronomer, so that was less of a rebelling.
You're like, but pretty tame.
Yeah, but so he drops out of school, which there's this Galileo myth of how he dropped out of school.
Uh-huh.
Did he quit or was he
expelled?
Now, the thing is, it says he quit, but from what I can tell, if you don't do homework, they're going to expel you. And he didn't do homework at all. And he even would badmouth and teachers. He was saying he wrote a 3,000 word essay on why a dress code is stupid. Yeah.
What a bad boy.
Again, yet another reason why I love Galileo. But music was in his background and may have influenced him in kind of some harmonies and chords of the heavens. And
that's a stretch.
No, that's a big stretch. Oh, well, from the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And we are both from the Cincinnati Observatory. In this episode, we're going to talk with Nick Lloyd, an amateur astronomer with a backyard urban observatory who also builds custom bases.
Awesome.
So cool. All right, so Galileo was not a musician.
No,
but
alas.
Alas, right. Nobody's perfect.
Well, at least not a very good one.
That's
not what he's known for. It's not like,
that's
wow.
Right. Yeah,
Galileo,
he's got a few other things.
He was a really killer drummer, but he was a lot better on the telescope.
And I think it's cool because today we're going to talk to Nick.
Yep.
And that's like two sides of the brain kind of, isn't it? Like music. Well, he's building these custom bases, which is so cool. Stand-up bases. And then also astronomy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like, I don't know, right? It's
kind
of cool that he's both.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, being in bands and astronomers. I mean, there's the one astronomer that's writes for Astronomy Magazine is Brian May.
Mm-hmm.
He got his PhD in astronomy. So going from
legit.
Queen? Did he play in Queen?
Yeah.
Okay, thumbs up from the Queen. Yeah.
I was like, is this
Sorry.
The same Brian May?
Well,
or are you just like...
I'm not really big on musicians. I don't really know their names.
You don't know Queen? It's
well,
not
I
just
know
like
who Queen is.
Musicians.
I had to second guess myself on that one. I think it's Queen. I just didn't want to sound really bad. But anyway, ask me an astronomy question. Let's go back to...
Yeah, right. Well, I wanted to see if... So Nick obviously plays stand-up bass.
Right.
And is an astronomer.
Right.
Do you play any instruments?
Oh, man. Yeah. So when I grew up, I was forced into playing piano. Mostly
is this after
against
you
my
went
door
to door selling donuts?
No. Oh, boy, we're not going to get my parents back on here.
God, we are.
But yeah, I played piano for a while and then rebelled against that. And I said, no, I'm not going to play piano anymore. I will not. And I closed
you
the
just,
thing.
Like,
I was
like, knocked
closed
it over.
It down.
Oh,
like,
no. That's,
that's
yeah.
That was good. At seven or so I did that. And then... So then in a band, I played the trumpet and trombone for a while, so that was fun.
The trumpet?
Yes. And then as an adult, I was in a very short-lived band. It was a two-person band, drums and bass. I played bass.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were called The Dilemma. It was,
Is this for real?
Yeah, we played two gigs, both at Sudsy Malone.
Did you just call them gigs?
Oh, yeah, they were actually gigs. They gave, I think
I know you knew the lingo.
Well, you know, when you've been in it so long, I've just, you know.
They're at Sudsy Malone's, you the gigs?
Yeah, if anybody remembers Sudsy Malone. So, you know, there are people doing their laundry, and then here we are playing drum and bass. So, yeah, don't even try to look them up on the internet because you won't find them.
Oh, it's, man. Because you had different colored hair. Was that when you had different colored hair?
Man, where are we going with this show? What is going on here?
Look, the people want to know. The voice of the people. They want to know more about what makes Dean Regas tick.
Yeah.
And apparently, it's being a band.
I was a bleach blonde back then. That's true.
Let's not go too far down this road because I want to revisit it because there's so many colors apparently of your hair that we can talk about.
That was the blonde phase. Platinum. No, strawberry blonde.
Okay.
Then, so.
Oh, God.
We played at Sudsy's a couple times, and we did play on WAIF radio. We did a live 35-minute set on radio, which was ridiculous. And it was a disaster, but it was like fun.
Oh,
they were like, they didn't invite us back.
Really?
So the dilemma broke up. But
oh, no.
I know. The drummer moved to New York and is in actual bands, whereas I was not.
Any famous ones?
I don't know.
I mean, you're on cable TV, so
that's
he can't
true.
Be more.
Good point.
Yeah. And we have a podcast for over a year.
I know. He's probably actually playing real gigs. But
I just, you know.
Yeah. What about you? Let's switch the subject awkwardly and switch it to you. What musical instruments did you play?
Well, I attempted to learn guitar. Mm. And it was funny because I'm left-handed, like all brilliant people are.
Right.
And my teacher wanted me to just do, he was right-handed. He's like, just do what I'm doing. This is the opposite. And I was like, this is the worst instruction.
Well, like a mirror image?
Yeah. Like, I was like, this isn't, he's like, and I think he told me that's how Elvis learned, which I don't even think that Elvis was left-handed.
Oh.
I think he was just full of it.
so that didn't work too well.
I've shaken a tambourine a time or two. So, you know, I have friends that are in bands, and that's cool.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I don't do that.
Yeah, but, and so in songs, there's a lot of astronomy in songs.
So it's a natural, like, there's a relationship there between, like, music and
I think
space.
So. There's something, I don't know what it is. There's a fascination by it. There's some people are inspired by it. There's so many songs with the moon in the title and stars and all that stuff.
True.
So which one, what's your go-to astronomy song when you got your headphones in at the observatory?
I actually think I'm only listening to songs that might be about space.
I assume that's what you're talking about. I mean.
Well, I want to talk about the most surprising song. And, did you realize that the song, The Final Countdown, by Europe is about space.
I'm sorry. I'm trying not to laugh out loud. Yes, it is. That is.
Am I not supposed to? Was I supposed to know?
Well,
what the
whole
are
they
time?
Counting down? What do you think they're
doing?
Dean, you think they're
New
counting
Year's
down
Eve?
When they're
New Year's Eve? Oh, smartass, smart aleck.
They're Europe, so they're counting down when the tea is ready.
You
the
really were
ready.
Laughing at me. He was like laughing. Like, is she this? Like, what?
Well. That song is now ruined for me, though, because, well, first it was, I really liked it because I grew up at that time. I was like, yeah, this song rocks. Final Countdown, they're going to space. But now it's totally ruined by Arrested Development because it's the song that Joe plays because he's doing his magic act and he always does the Final Countdown and dance. So that song is ruined for me for that.
I mean, that's funny, though. I mean, I didn't think it was that, I did not think it was that obvious that that's what it was about.
Really?
You can be, there may be lots of Final Countdowns, like you're counting down to... stuff.
We'll have to get you the lyrics because it's pretty obvious from the lyrics.
I don't listen to the lyrics. I just listen to the refrain.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, I have sort of a history of misinterpreting songs. So, yeah. I mean, that's another show for another time, but I don't think it was that weird, but I didn't know it was about space.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What's your favorite
well,
one?
Well, I mean, there's that whole album by Boston that was good where they're going to space and there's Rocket Man and...
what about David Bowie?
David Bowie. That's right. Yep.
Like
that song is pretty cool.
It is very
cool. Fly Me to the Moon, Blue Moon.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about Fly Me to the Moon. That's a nice one.
Moon River. There's all sorts of things.
There are so many.
Go on forever.
We really could.
So now there is a band that I really want to get on the podcast, and so this is kind of my plea to them. I hope that they're listening. College favorite band was named Man or Astro Man. So this was before I was into astronomy. I was really into this band called Man or Astroman. They're, you know, okay. 90s, like, surfy, spacey rock, mostly no vocals, that kind of stuff.
Oh, so, that's right. I forgot that you like this. They don't sing, though.
No, they don't sing very much. So they sing off. But they had a whole shtick to them, which I thought was pretty good, is that they were really aliens. At least this is how I remember this from the hazy 90s, is that they were aliens and they crashed Earth and their spacecraft broke into pieces. And so they decided to form a band so they could go on tour to collect all the pieces. It's a pretty good, idea. So they were really in character that they were aliens.
Did they dress like they were aliens?
A little bit. Or spacemen. And so, and one would play a guitar with a TV on his head while it was on fire. That was just another little game. But anyway, this is, so I met them in 1996, what? Randomly.
You met them?
Yes, I met them randomly. I was in New Mexico at the Atomic Museum.
Uh-huh.
And I walk in and I'm like, those are the guys from
Man or Astroman. You knew what they
look like? Yeah, of course. I saw them lots of times. I was like, those are the guys from Man or Astroman. And so I went up to them and I said, hi, I'm a big fan. And I totally kind of freaked them out because they're like, uh-huh. What are you doing in the middle of New Mexico? How do
you
even know
been
who we are?
Following us and
we're
how
aliens. And so then just a couple of years ago, they came to Cincinnati. They were playing again.
Okay.
And I invited them to the observatory and they actually came.
No, they did not.
They were super excited. They're like, because I was like, you know, I'm on Stargazers. And they're like, we love Jack Horkheimer. You're the new Jack Horkheimer. And so they
came. Didn't remember you from New Mexico.
one of the guys claims that he remembers me from Mexico from 20 years earlier.
Well, they probably get mobbed by fans everywhere they go. So they were like, oh, I'm sorry. Can't remember.
Right. Sorry. Oh, there's so many.
So they came to the observatory.
They came to the observatory.
And you like freaked out.
It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. And then it was a clear night. So the whole band, the other bands came that were with the plane with them.
Oh, wow.
Their crew. So it was pretty cool hanging out with them.
Wow, that is cool.
So we want them on the podcast. So
okay.
I hope they are hearing because they are, and they'll
maybe
probably
just email them.
Yeah, maybe. So it's a way to do it. I guess that would be an easier
listening.
Way. Hopefully you're listening.
Yeah.
But that would be great if we get them on. Any other, and if folks have any other like music tips of things we should, like some bands we should get into and that have some space themes to them, that would be cool.
Yeah, I think we should get Jake Speed to come in.
Oh, yeah.
Because he has a song about our founder.
That's right, yeah.
Ormsby McKnight
Mitchell. Yeah, band Jake Speed and the Freddies.
Very specific.
Yes, he did a whole song for the history of the observatory.
That's
it's really cool.
People loved it.
Oh, yeah, I liked it. I thought it was very good.
Any other suggestions, hit us up on social media.
Awesome.
Is hit us up the way you say it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm cooler than you are.
In music lingo, that's how we'd say
that's
it.
That's right.
So this time we've got Nick Lloyd in the studio. He's a pretty cool guy because he is the owner of Nick Lloyd Basses, where he builds custom double basses for real professional musicians. But in his spare time, and I guess he has a lot of spare time, he's an astronomer with a backyard observatory. So we wanted to find out more about what he's been doing, how he can observe the sky, and so we have him in the studio today. Well, Nick, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Dean.
So, as an urban astronomer, how in the world did you get into this? Is that the right term for you?
Yeah, urban amateur astronomer.
Yeah. How did you get into astronomy in the first place?
Well, you know, I was a little boy, 8 years old, and I looked through a telescope, and I saw Jupiter, and it's like, wow! You know, and then from then on, I've used telescopes like everybody else, regular eyepiece, and what's nice about astronomy is that if you step away from it for a few years, not much changes, you know? So I fell out of it, and then I came back into it, and I got really active in Cincinnati with, you know, visual astronomy, going to Stone Lick Lake, observing. And then kind of researching online, I came across this really great forum called cloudynights.com, mm-hmm. which is a great name for an astronomy website.
Oh, Cloudy Nights.
Cloudy
That's
Nights.
Always the worst.
That's what you're doing on Cloudy Nights. You're online.
You're on the forum.
Yeah, looking at gear. And I came across these other astronomers in cities like Los Angeles and London and Toronto. With 10 million people, guys were observing in their backyard and looking at galaxies. I'm like, well, how do you do that? So I came across this little branch of amateur astronomy called EAA, which is electronically assisted astronomy, or near live viewing.
Near live.
Near live.
It's almost live.
It's almost live. Uh-huh. It's not Memorex. So I have a digital camera, a CCD camera that's specially made for this, and I put it into my telescope, and I hook my laptop up to the camera, and within 10 to 15 minutes, I can look at an image that I just made while sitting in my backyard in the middle of Cincinnati with, you know, 300,000 neighbors.
Wow.
So that's how I got into this branch of it. And since then, I've built my own observatory, and anytime it's clear, regardless of the phase of the moon, I am in my observatory, listening to Pandora, looking at galaxies.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So tell us a little more about your setup in your backyard observatory and what that's like.
Yeah, so it's a little 7-foot by 7-foot Home Depot garden shed.
Oh.
You could drive right by it and think, oh, the guy puts his lawnmower in there. yeah, I have a modest telescope on a mount that tracks the night sky. That is the one requirement you have to have. Your scope has to track the stars. Pretty simple technology. And then in there, I've got a laptop and my cameras. And in the wintertime, I've got a space heater. And in the summertime, I've got a little fan. So it's...
So you actually sit in the shed with it.
Oh, yeah.
You could be inside.
Well, I could be inside, but I still like to be under the stars.
He's okay. Dedicated.
So, that is dedication. Yeah. The modern astronomers,
they'd be all fancy.
They'd be in San Diego sitting and sipping and stuff and be like, oh, the data just came in.
No. I like to be outside under the stars and, you know, might have a little glass of brandy and maybe a cigar, but I like to be outside. Because a night under the stars is a night under the stars. I don't care what kind of gear you use, whether it's binoculars, naked eye, or a camera. It's a night under the stars.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Well, and so light pollution is a problem. But you were telling us, well, you kind of have some solutions. And what's some good solutions for the folks living in the city to do some more stargazing?
Yeah, so, you know, light pollution is, it's getting worse and worse, and I feel like it's a bit of a David and Goliath battle. I still go to the country and drive an hour and a half and look through a telescope through an eyepiece. I love looking at the planets that way. But in the city, I use this digital camera, and I will take a 30-second exposure, let's say a galaxy, and then the software for the camera automatically takes another 30-second exposure. So what happens in the software is that it stacks the same image on top of itself. So one 30-second exposure is called one sub. And if I were to take 10 of those subs, that would give me 300 seconds of data. But when it's stacked, it has more contrast, and it has to do with signal-to-noise ratio, which is above my understanding of the technology. All I know is that it works.
It just does it.
It just does it automatically. If I were to take one 300-second image of that galaxy, it would be all washed out by the light pollution. But by taking it in slices, you get more contrast and you can actually see something.
Wow. So, I mean, it's definitely something not the human eye can make out. This is a camera, but is it real? Are you getting real stuff?
I'm getting real stuff. I can resolve the arms of galaxies. I can see nebula-forming regions in other galaxies. So I'm looking at objects that are 30, 40 million light years away within 10 to 15 minutes of being on that object. In the little nerdy astronomy world, the purists that will only look through a telescope live, they think we're kind of cheating somehow. To me, it's all photons. And if I gather photons and stack them with a simple use of technology, I'm still looking at photons. And, boy, it's really great to look at a galaxy 30 million light years away in your backyard. You know, if I were to drive an hour and a half and be in a dark site and look at that same galaxy, I would see more contrast, but I wouldn't see near the level of detail that I get with this simple camera.
You called it EAA?
EAA, Electronically Assisted Astronomy.
Ah.
Is there a showdown brewing between, like, the electric? I feel like it's, like, a little bit, like, they don't like what we
are
do.
Are you feeling some tension here? I'm
wondering, like, I don't know. Is this going to be a thing?
You know, as somebody using a 173-year-old telescope, I have to be slightly...
That you're obsessed with.
Well, I think this, you know, cheating is a strong word, I would say. But I'm jealous. How about that? Well, I'm jealous.
Professional jealousy. You love the
jealousy. Metroscope. I love telescopes. I love looking through the observatory's telescope, you know, and looking at things like the planets. It's okay with a camera, but it is best with the eye. We have a very fast frame rate, put it that way. And the resolution we get, I mean, tonight I'm looking at Saturn just with eyeball and a classic refractor. I'm really looking forward to it. But for galaxies, yeah, I mean, the human eye is not going to pick up the level of detail. So I have respect for both camps, but yeah, it can get a little heated.
It was very diplomatic.
It can get a little heated.
That was very nice.
Yeah, I'm not going to give up my address because I'll get
the that's right.
Look for a shed, unmarked shed.
And the smell of cigar smoke.
Yeah, that's right. I'll have a cigar waiting for you. one of the questions we get a lot at the observatory is, so what's the farthest thing you can see? And with you, I think it's a valid question because, I mean, you've looked at some galaxies that are pretty far. Is there one that you're like, man, I can't believe I got a picture of that one or something like that?
I came into a galaxy field of the PCG catalog.
Whoa.
Which I didn't know existed.
That's down there.
I mean, we all know Messier, and then there's NGC. And then, you know, I'm looking at this NGC galaxy of about 12th magnitude. And then after about 15 minutes of imaging, I see all these little mosquito-sized fuzzy specks in the field of view, in the background. And I go online and I look up, well, what are these? These are PCG galaxies that were 17th magnitude. Yeah. And we're talking over 50 million light years. I was pretty excited to see that.
That's some faint stuff.
It's some faint stuff.
It's, you know, hundreds of times fainter than what normal scopes can see, really, and around cities, at least.
Yeah. And, of course, the resolution, it was just a little mosquito fuzz.
Yeah.
But in this field of view, it was about half a degree as what my camera picks up for the night sky. So half of the size of the full moon. In this field of view, I was looking at more galaxies than I was stars.
Whoa.
Which was incredible, you know? I mean, I lost count of all the galaxies I saw. So it's like your own little personal Hubble moment. I mean, we've seen the photographs of the night sky with Hubble where it's just a sea of galaxies. Well, to experience that with your own equipment in your backyard in a city is pretty humbling.
That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah, it is awesome.
The Hubble telescope.
The Hubble telescope. Yeah.
It's an old joke. Man.
I had named my observatory the Observer Lounge. Maybe I'll move it. Yeah. Maybe I'll move it to the Hubble telescope.
Yeah.
Observer Lounge is pretty good.
That's pretty good. So what kind of equipment do folks need if they want to try this themselves? How would you get started?
Well, I would first visit cloudynights.com.
Uh-huh.
It's a great forum. There are a lot of ways to spend money in this hobby, and there are a lot of ways to save money. So it doesn't have to be a massive outlay of cash.
But like your equipment you have set up, like what's your scope and camera?
So my scope and mount, $1,000.
Okay.
It's a tracking mount, and it's an 8-inch F4 Newtonian reflector.
Okay.
So it's not a huge scope. And then the camera, that's about $600. And then any laptop that you have laying around, or you can go to Best Buy and get one for $250. This is an off-the-shelf Asus laptop that I bought for $250. And I just use it for astronomy. That's really about it. You don't have to have an observatory and all this other stuff. So, you know, I've seen other setups that you can get a budget camera for $250, and you can get a... one of those small Nexstar type tracking telescopes. They run $500 or $600. So you could get into this for, you know, $1,000, $1,200. And it's a terrific way for outreach. It's great for people that are older and their eyes, they don't like staring through an eyepiece. Or if for a lot of young people, you can have your kids all look at a galaxy together. So it's great for families and for outreach.
And you just happen to be flashing, oh, just this galaxy I took a picture of. Oh, no big deal.
That's a cool picture.
Whatever that is. And yeah. You see something or other.
Yeah. I brought my laptop in to show you, you know, the kind of the basic setup. So
are you jealous, Dean?
I am jealous. That's an awesome picture. Well, we're going to have to post this thing because, I mean, that's like.
I did take a picture of it.
Did you?
Okay. I did, yeah, for our social media. Yeah. If that's okay, of course.
No,
that's
fine. That's fine. I don't own that galaxy. So. Wish I did.
Did you have the one last question?
Yeah, I obviously have questions because you and Dean are friends, and I want to know if there's anything like dirt on him, but I can't ask that. I know, fine. I'll stay on script or whatever.
Or vice versa.
But I wanted to know, I mean, I'm the non-astronomer here, although I think it's all very cool, but I think that your day job is really cool too,
oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That you make custom stand-up bases. Is that?
That's correct.
Right. And can you just, I mean, how'd you get into that? Like, that's really cool. What's the
it was,
what's the story
It was
there?
Kind of the same time I picked up astronomy, but in the fourth grade, I met the double bass.
Wow.
And I played the double bass my entire life, and okay. I decided I wanted to make them. So then I studied violin making and then got into bass making that way. So okay. I still
it's
play.
It's just a bigger violin.
It's
right?
a bigger violin. That's right. That's right.
Wow.
So
so you were thinking, all right, I need an expensive hobby and an even more expensive hobby. Is that the...
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
Yeah.
That's good. Next yeah. will be yacht building.
Yeah, I tried boating. That was
oh,
way
right.
too...
Oh, boat. I forgot about
yeah,
that. Sorry.
That was way too expensive.
Sorry, I didn't mean to go there. I forgot
that's
about,
all right.
I forgot about your yacht experience.
That's very cool.
I'll try anything twice.
That's right. So. Well, Nick, thanks so much for joining us today and telling
you,
us
Dean.
All about this. It's great
you,
to hear about this.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Nick Lloyd, backyard astronomer and acclaimed base builder. Thanks very much for joining us, Nick. Now, if you want to see some pictures that Nick's taken, go to our website, wvxu.org/lookingup.
Well, the Cincinnati Observatory has a long history, so you can probably imagine the different correspondence and questions we've gotten over the years that maybe, you know, include or suggest some unique points of view. And Dean is going to share one today. It's not really it's more of a misconception,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
About a date.
A date in history. We have got a big day in space.
That's
coming
right.
up. July 27th.
Yep.
A lot of
Huge.
Things happening in one day. Now, some of them are cool. Some of them are not cool. Some of them are frustrating, and some of them aren't going to be even visible.
Oh.
So the big deal is July 27th, three things are going to happen mm-hmm. all at once. One, we're going to have a full moon.
That's fine.
Two, we're going to have Mars at opposition, meaning Mars is going to be closest to Earth it'll be for, for
15
the last
years,
15
right?
years. Thanks. Sorry, I forgot about that. 15 years.
Yeah.
Right?
15 years. See, I know stuff.
Good studying. And so that's number two. Now, that's really exciting because mm-hmm. people love Mars. They go nuts over Mars. And so when it's close, it looks really good in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
But number three, there's going to be a total lunar eclipse on that day. So full moon. Mars at opposition, total lunar eclipse all in one day. See, you're sufficiently impressed.
Very, very impressed.
Now
you're about to just pop this balloon.
Then
aren't
here's
you?
Where the problem is. So this is where everybody gets excited, and they're going to start calling us when they see it on their phones. Mm-hmm. Like eclipse today, awesome. Well, so the first one's true. Full moon, very good. We can see that. We're going to see it right after dark on the night of the 27th.
Okay.
Two, Mars at opposition. Awesome. We're going to see that. Be visible from the United States right after it gets dark. In fact, the moon and Mars are going to be right next to each other in the sky.
Is it just one day
night.
Or one night?
One night.
Oh, my gosh.
One
night
only. July 27th.
Mars is like, then I'm out.
Right. And no, moon's out after that.
Oh, moon's so out,
moon's,
sorry.
Moon's out. It's like, I've had enough of Mars.
That's right.
But on the 27th, the moon, full moon, and Mars at its brightest will be next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But then the eclipse is not for us, unfortunately. This is where it's going to be depressing because people are going to want to come and see the eclipse for themselves, but it's only visible from the Eastern Hemisphere. So Europe, Africa, Asia gets to see the eclipse, but we don't get to see it at all. So it's kind of a bummer. And so just for folks that are watching the news and seeing that eclipse, well, you better get on a plane real quick, because yeah, you can't see it from from around here unless you go east or west halfway around the world, basically. But you know, we've had some pretty good eclipses lately, so
yeah,
we've been doing pretty well on eclipses. And so then the next one in the United States is going to be in January of next year, a total lunar eclipse in January, January 20th. And mm-hmm. so that will be a cool one to check out.
That's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to Nick Lloyd for joining us.
We'd like to hear from you on social media. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Looking Up WVXU. And on Twitter, we're at Looking Up Podcast. You can also drop us an email at lookingup@wvxu.org.
We would love to hear from all of our kid listeners. What's your favorite planet? Do you want to live on Mars? What would you ask Dean if you could? I don't want to dissuade the adults, but, you know, kids have some great questions. So send us an email or post on our Facebook or Twitter.
I'd like to live on Mars, at least for a day or so.
We weren't asking you,
right,
for the kids.
Remember to subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts and give us a rating and comment on iTunes. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y question mark, from their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recording and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstrow is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.